Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming. I want to call the meeting to order, the April 23rd Board of Directors meeting of the Desert Healthcare District. Andrea, could you please call the roll?
So Vice President Zindo?
Here.
Director Matthews?
Here.
Director Rogers?
Here.
Director Perenzio?
Here.
Director Borja?
Here.
And Director DeLauro?
Here.
And I'd like to ask Alejandro Espinoza to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Would everyone please stand?
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So, second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The board has a policy of limiting speakers to no more than 3 minutes. The board cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on agenda items when they come up for discussion and or action. Are there any public people who would like to speak? Hearing none, we'll go on to the next agenda item. Some of you may know that last week, President Jennifer Wortham announced that she was moving out of the area to take a job in Ventura County, and she resigned her position on the Board of Directors. Therefore, we have today to select new officers, and then we'll also have to talk about how to fill that vacancy. So at this point, I'd like to turn, and first of all, I want to thank Dr. Wortham for her work over the last 3 years and all the things she's done, and wish her well, and I know the rest of the board joins me in that too. I would like to turn it over to Counsel Jeffrey Scott to conduct the election.
All right, so nominations are open for the office of president. As more than one person may be nominated, nominations remain open until everybody has an opportunity to make them, and then we'll close the nominations. So nominations are open.
I nominate Vice President Les Stendahl to be president of the board.
Are there any other nominations? Okay, nominations are closed. And I would like to call for a vote on that nomination of Director Stendahl.
Roll call.
I'm sorry.
So we have Directors. Vice President Zindo?
Abstain.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Director Rogers?
Aye.
Director Perenzio?
Aye.
Director Borja?
Aye.
And Director DeLauro?
Yes.
Could I have a motion and a second? We make the nomination unanimous.
A motion.
I second to make the decision unanimous.
Just a motion.
My motion.
That's okay. Motion.
All
second.
In favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. The next position is the vice president / secretary, and we'd like to open up the nominations for that position.
I would move that Director DeLauro be the vice president.
Are there any other nominations?
I would nominate Director Cal Rogers.
Okay. So we can do this two ways. We can pass out the ballots.
There might be more nominations. Come on, give it a try.
Oh, yeah, okay. Are there any other nominations before we close it? Okay. So could we, well, let me do this to make it... Okay, here's a ballot. So you're going to write this down. Oh, that's Carol, sorry. And that, there you go. Karen. So write down your name, and then I'll take the ballots. All right. Director DeLara votes for Carol Rogers.
Oh, clever.
Director Borgia votes for Director DeLara. Director Matthews votes for Director DeLara. Director Zendel abstains. Director Rogers votes for Director DeLara. And Director Perez-Gill votes for Director DeLara. So who's counting? Okay. Could I get a motion and a second to make it unanimous?
I move.
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, the final position is the treasurer. So do we have any, I'd like to open up nominations for the office of treasurer.
I would like to nominate Mark Matthews as treasurer for life.
No.
Are there any other nominations?
No.
Okay, could we get a motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, I've got to get a motion in a second.
So moved. I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so it's unanimous. Thank you.
All right. The second item has to do with how we fill the vacancy on the board. Scott?
The Government Code Section 78 provides a method for filling the vacancy of the healthcare district board member. And in our case, Director Wortham's resignation was effective April 15th, 2019. The district board, under the applicable statutes, has 60 days from April 15th, which is basically June 14th, to appoint or call an election to fill that vacancy. And so, in accordance with the Health and Safety Code applicable provision, the new director is required to be a resident from the district that Director Wortham represented. If the board doesn't fill a vacancy within the next 2 months, 60 days, then it defaults to the Board of Supervisors, who has 30 days to either appoint a director or call an election, direct the board, the district call an election. It's been my experience over the years that in most cases, boards of supervisors don't like to get involved in local politics, so they typically punt and send it back to the districts to hold their own election. And elections can be costly, particularly in a district this large. So there is an incentive for the board members to fill the vacancy by appointment. Similar to the appointment process that we just went through with Directors Borgia and DeLara, we'll need to post, there's an attached notice of vacancy that's in your board packet in three conspicuous places within the district for at least 15 days prior to the meeting in which the board can interview and consider the appointments. And maybe the board will also want to put it in the newspaper and make sure it's posted on the website.
Okay, that's all right.
And as before, the interview process will be an open public meeting in which everyone's invited, and the vote of the board must be done in open session. So I would recommend that the board approve the attached notice of vacancy form and direct staff to post and publish the form and schedule a special meeting sometime after May 13th or wait until the regular meeting on May 28th to interview the applicants and appoint a new board member to Zone 5.
By the way, there are maps of Zone 5 on the back there. This is the Zone 5 that was created for the 2018 election, although there was no election in 2018. So There's a resolution, a notice of vacancy on page 8 of the agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve this?
I move.
Do I hear a second?
I second.
Is there any discussion?
I have a point of order. Do we know what date we want? Because we can't post this until we get a date of the meeting.
Andrea, did we settle on a date?
What were the two dates you threw out there?
Okay, so we were talking May 14th or 15th.
What did the poll say?
Kind of come up with a consensus that the 14th works, except for a limitation on the time between 3 and 5. That also coincides with our currently scheduled definite committee meeting, but I think we could move that up ahead of that if that's a suitable time for the director.
And the other date was the 28th, correct?
Well,
no, the 15th.
The 14th or 15th.
Or you can kick it over to the regular meeting. Because
there's a business. That's the 28th.
And that was the 28th, right. Which is the day after Memorial Day, and it's always a mess anyway.
Or we can do it on the 28th.
I like the 14th.
The 28th?
You can do it at the regular meeting if you want to wait till then to do the appointment.
I like the earlier date.
Same here.
I like the earlier date. I do not like the earlier time people work. Just 3 to 5 doesn't give us access to the best candidates, all around access to people to join us.
So 5:30?
Well, I have to be finished by 6:30 because I have an appointment that I cannot change.
I think 5 o'clock would be fine.
5 o'clock?
You think we could do everybody, the interviews, the selection, by 5:30?
Last time it took like 2 hours.
Yeah, but it was district. It was district wide, or at least it was the east portion. This is one district, and maybe we ought to hold the meeting in that district, in that zone.
Well, the challenge we have is we don't have a place, but we'd like to post this notice. And we would like to do that tomorrow. So we've got to get both a place and a date.
Got
time.
It.
So I guess the districts, we have that place we can utilize. Which probably isn't too far from this district.
Or we can put some other dates out there.
No, no.
I think the 14th would work. And you have that date open, Mark?
Until I have to be out of here by 6:30.
You say the 14th.
On the 14th, but what about the 28th? Oh, they want it earlier.
We have a board meeting that with a packed agenda, I think.
Got it. So what about the 15th?
I can't make it on the 15th. I'll be out of town completely. Should we go back to the 28th then?
You know, I do. First of all, there is no public comment at this meeting. It's just the interviewees and. I think we should do it when the board can be here.
Okay, yeah, I agree.
Could we compromise and make it at 4 o'clock instead of 3 o'clock? Would that be...
Would we be willing to accommodate people who can't make it in the selection process? Like,
well,
I know last
always,
time it was randomized.
You can always consider it their resumes and, you know, they're not going to be able to make it.
Yeah, they don't need to be present.
And they could also call in. I guess we could work that too.
And again, as long as we're done by 6 o'clock, I think if somebody couldn't get there till 5, we could postpone their thing until...
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think they could.
So.
And I don't know how many people we're going to have, but I think if we started at 4 and is that agreeable to everybody, 4 o'clock?
On the 14th.
On the 14th?
Yeah.
In the district office.
So long as people can call in if they're not available to be here present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'll be at the district or at RAP?
Because we don't have the reservation yet at RAP and we don't know that it's available and we have to post it today because the clock is ticking.
It also depends on the number of persons, too.
So
given our small boardroom, it may depend on the number of nominees as well.
Well, I mean, I don't think we're going to have a huge number of nominees, but I don't know. It's only a two-week period. It's in a relatively, it's in a district, an area of town, instead of half the city.
So, are we agreed?
May 14th at
4 o'clock?
4 o'clock. 4 to 6.
At the Stair Jones?
Yes, at the district office.
Okay, so that we'll fill that in, and that resolution is before you, so go ahead.
Let's do a roll call.
So, President Zendo?
Yes.
Vice President DeLauro?
Yes.
Director Matthew?
Yes.
Director Perezkio?
Yes.
And Director Warren?
Yes.
And Director Rogers?
I'm sorry, and Director Rogers.
All right.
Yes.
The nominations.
This is a problem with big boards, you know.
All right, the next agenda item is the consent agenda, which includes the minutes of the board meeting and the finance meeting from February and March. Do I hear a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the next item is a public hearing about expansion and rezoning background, and I'm going to turn it over to our interim CEO, Chris Christensen.
Okay, so most of us in the room know about the history a little bit, but just to recap a little, in 2018.
Is this the mic?
Mic.
So in 2018, the district went through a redistricting process to move from an at-large election process to creating climate zones. And as a result of that, the November election, there were zones 2 and 4 that were part of that election. And Director Rogers and Perezkio were the successful candidates or incumbent in regards to Director Rogers. Then there was the AB 2414, the major DD that was passed, which expanded the entire district boundaries to include the entire Coachella Valley. Along with that, the board was required to increase from 5 to 7 in January. 2 additional board members were appointed. Everybody hear me okay?
Very light.
Okay.
Speak into the mic.
Yep, light. A good rock star puts his lips on the thing, so get there.
All right, here we go. Do I need to repeat anything, or are we good? Okay, just to recap, I'll go back to the AB 2414. The major DB was passed in November, which expanded the board of directors from 5 members to 7. In January, we appointed 2 additional board members, Director Borja and Director Galara. And also part of the AB 2414 legislation also required that due to the expansion, that the redistricting needed to be increased from 5 zones to 7. So we are at this process now where we're going to do 4 public hearings. This is the first of 4. The second one will be May 28th in Cathedral City at the Cathedral City Community Center. There will be 2 additional public hearings in the fall, one in September, and one in October, and the final one in November. And the selection will be made at that point. If there's no other questions regarding that, I'd like to turn over the first public hearing process to Justin Levitt to help us walk through that process.
Thank you, President Zendo, members of the board, members of the public who are here tonight, and thank you, Mr. Christensen, for that introduction. My name is Justin Levitt. I'm with National Demographics, and what we're here to start to talk about tonight is going through the process of readjusting the zones to follow the basic criteria for drawing districts or zones. Lynn, the last time we went through this last summer, we have 5 zones to work with, and we followed the basic rules and criteria for pairing them. Because of the expansion to 7, right now we have districts that are not equally sized in population, and what we need to do is adjust them to meet the legal requirements. And this was not only specified in that assembly bill, but this keeps the district kind of looking forward to next year, 2020, when we're going to be taking the census, and the following year in 2021, with that new census data, adjusting these boundaries to reflect changes in population since 2010. So what are the criteria that we're looking at as part of this zoning process? Well, the main criteria, or I'll not say main, but the place we need to start is looking at the federal Supreme Court's requirements for drawing zones. And the first one is equal population. Each trustee area or zone has to be the same size, the same total number of inhabitants. And this includes children, this includes non-citizens. It's not equal numbers of voters. It's not equal numbers of permanent residents. It's anyone who was counted on that April 1st, 2010 number. And that comes out to just over 60,000, about 60,275. And while they recognize you don't necessarily need to get perfect, you do need to get close. We're going to be looking at that deviation, difference from that perfect equality, and we want that percentage to stay under 10% so that each district is somewhat reasonably sized compared to the others. In addition, we have to pay attention to the Federal Voting Rights Act. One of the things as part of the expansion, the district added a very Latino community to the eastern end. Indio, Coachella, Thermal, Oasis, North Shore. The Voting Rights Act demands that we look at protected classes, groups that have historically faced barriers or discrimination to registration and voting, and try to draw districts that ensure that that group has an opportunity to elect. So while race cannot be the only factor or the predominant factor, it must be one of many factors that we balance and take into account as part of the process. In addition, we will have to look at the traditional criteria to figure out how to balance race along with other factors. So communities of interest really gets at the principle that there are defined neighborhoods or communities or areas that have similar problems or similar concerns that should stay together, that need to be represented as one collective entity. And so these are often different depending on whether you're looking at a school district, a water district, or a healthcare district. And these are often defined differently by different members of the community. This is where a lot of our debate, I think and hope, is going to focus. Which map or what idea or proposals do the best job at representing different communities of interest? In addition, we want to make sure that districts are recognizable on the ground. Is it easier for people to understand which area they live in? With the intent that they might understand better who their representative is. So following boundaries, city boundaries, natural boundaries that make, or man-made boundaries like roads or canals, is what we try to do. Major roads rather than jogging through a neighborhood. In addition, we look at, you know, especially planned future growth. How have the numbers changed? You'll see on our demographic sheets that we also have a listing of the estimated population. Now, that's an estimate. We don't know exactly what census is going to find. And especially in an area like the Coachella Valley, where you have a lot of residents who may only live here part-time, we know that these population estimates may actually be off substantially come 2020. That all depends on getting people counted as part of the census process. But we do provide that estimate so we can compare and see, okay, this area has not seemed to grow as fast as other areas, or this area has grown comparatively faster. Also, just one quirk about dealing with a healthcare district. State law requires that the odd numbered districts all hold election in the same year, and the even numbered zones all hold election in the same year. And so, sometimes you might wonder why district numbers change or zone numbers change and move. That's because we're working with this principle that those numbers have to correspond to seats that are up in particular years. Now, in addition to the maps, we have paper maps. We have larger maps printed off today, and we'd encourage you to go take a look at them. We also have paper copies for you to take home with you. We also have a link on the presentation that will be posted to the website that links to a Google viewer, basically a place where you can search for addresses, search for locations, and turn on and off different layers. We have a number of layers already on there, like the cities, We can also add additional layers as requested. It has all the streets on there, it has all the natural features. Basically, this is a really powerful tool to let you understand where you would be located or where certain places would be, depending on which map you're looking at. You may be familiar, we had something like this in the first hearing as well, the first round as well. So looking through the two maps, we have these two maps, the starting points. And I want to emphasize that this is the first time we're talking about them, so we're not necessarily saying that this is going to be the map adopted. We want your comments and feedback on them, and if it leads to the preparation of better maps, we welcome that. So first of all, we have the agave map. We didn't go with colors this time because we used colors in the first process, so I'll try to distinguish it a little bit. This map would have, and we have a little bit of a zoom in here to look at this. This map would have, this map basically it's population balance, deviation is 3.15%, so well under that 10% limit. There are three majority Latino zones. In this map, it's Area 4, Area 6, and Area 7. Now, in this map, what we've tried to do is follow major roads as closely as possible, trying to, again, incorporate city boundaries and other boundaries as needed in order to balance the population, as well as respecting the current board and where the current board lives. So Zone 1 is mostly based in Palm Springs and Rancho Mirage. It kind of includes most of the areas in Palm Springs north of Palm Canyon, also including most of the city of Rancho Mirage and a portion of Cathedral City just north of Highway 111. Zone 2 includes most of Desert Hot Springs, Desert Edge. It crosses over kind of the northern end of the Coachella Valley to include all of the northern communities, Sky Valley, Indian Hills, and then reaches down into Palm Desert, includes a big chunk of Palm Desert as well. Area 3 is our southern focus district. It includes areas south of Highway 111 as it crosses the Coachella Valley. It includes a little bit of Indian Wells, Lapal, La Quinta, kind of areas that are, you know, again, in the southern end of those cities. Area 4, our first majority Latino district, is centered in Cathedral City. It also includes a small portion of Garnet and Desert Hot Springs that also are majority Latino, and a portion of Thousand Palms that is majority Latino as well. And then we have our East Valley seats. Areas 5, 6, and 7, or Zones 5, 6, and 7 are all in the expansion area. Zone 5 includes Bermuda Dunes, the bulk of Indian Wells, and the northern end of La Quinta as well as the eastern portion of Palm Desert. Zone 6 and Zone 7 basically split the Indio Coachella all the way down to the Salton Sea into the northern portion and the southern portion. And the idea here was that, you know, in those rural communities, there's actually very low registration, very low turnout. And we wanted to make sure that they have access to two different representatives in this, in at least one of their proposals, so that Zone 7 and 6 would divide those neighborhoods that stretch down into the Salton Sea. Zone 6 is more of a central downtown Indio seat. Zone 7 includes the southern portions of Indio, most of Coachella, and then down to Salton City through Oasis. Very different proposal. We wanted to show you the options with the Yucca map. Again, you see that the election years will be the same. Zones 1, 3, 5, and 7 were elected in 2020, 2, 4, and 6 in 2022. This map, I'll highlight some of the major differences here. This one keeps all of Desert Hot Springs and Garnet, all of that northern area, together in one district. It has slightly less of Desert Palms in that seat. Although for population, it needs to expand on where it was in the original map. And so that's into the Desert Palms area. Zone 1 in this map includes more of Palm Desert. It kind of goes further westward compared to the first version. The area that basically is the Palm Springs City Council District 1 area, on areas like Duluth Park and Gets Edge Highland Gateway are linked with the Dream Homes and Central Cathedral City neighborhoods, as well as Thousand Palms. While this is not a majority Latino district in this map, it is a plurality Latino district map. It's at 45% Latino, so just kind of approaching that 50% threshold. In addition, it has a higher Asian and African American percentage compared to District 4 on the Agave map. Again, Zone 3 is mostly a southern seat. The main difference here is it has a bit more of La Quinta and Indian Wells and a little bit less of Cathedral City. In fact, it kind of wraps around Cathedral City and the Cove area of Cathedral City. Like the first map, Zones 5, 6, and 7 are entirely in the expansion area eastward. And unlike the first map, these are all three majority Latino seats. Now, what's the trade-off here? You know, why do we have a map with two and a map with three majority Latino seats on the East Valley? Well, the trade-off comes in when we look at registration and voting. So, like I mentioned, that area, especially south of Indio itself, into Coachella, Thermal Oasis, have very low voter registration. And when we divide it into three areas, as we do here, we have trustee or zones that may not have a Latino registration or voting majority. When we have two districts that include that Latino core, we have two districts that have a very solid Latino voting and registration majority. We wanted to highlight both sides of this trade-off for you, because under the Voting Rights Act, we have to consider both options. Is citizens of voting age, eligible voters, all that we need to look at, or do we also need to consider registration and voting in terms of drawing those seats in the Indio, Coachella, and East Valley areas? And so in this map, areas 5, 6, and 7 are majority Latino by eligible voters, but do not have a registration, or have actually come very close to not having a registration or voting majority. And given turnout rates, for example, looking at 2016 to 2014, we see that some of these areas might be a functional majority Latino district by registration in 2016, but were not in an off-cycle election like 2014. And so we want to present both sides of this to you, and that's why we show you these different concepts between the different maps. Now, in terms of tonight, I'm happy to answer questions, begin the conversation. I'm happy to bring back anything you would like to see for the May meeting. After May, just to reiterate the schedule, we're going to be taking a break for over the summer, and then we're going to come back and have that selection process in the fall. So with that, thank you very much for your time tonight, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
I think maybe before the board comments, we might ask for a public comment at this point. Remember, you have 3 minutes, and if you would like to say something, you can go up to the mic and tell us your name and where you live and such as such. Anybody? Okay.
I like to.
Yeah.
I go to the mic?
Yeah, please. State your name and.
Well, my name is Don Mars, for acronym for Mario Alberto Rodriguez. I believe the zoning, it seems like the putting Hispanics into one area, it would limit their ability to choose a house that they would be happy in and have their heart set on to move into if they could afford it. Right now, I don't see the benefits of putting Hispanics into one group set destination zoning area. Everybody aspires to be able to educate themselves and work at a occupation or a job to be able to earn the income they want to try and attain to be able to move into an area that they would be happy to have a family grow up and be raised in. I know that's for all people for sure. So I'm not certain right now if this would be a good idea zoning area.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
Good afternoon. My name is Joey Acuna, resident of the city of Coachella. Just a more of a process question, I guess. I don't know if you guys can answer, maybe possibly. So my understanding is you did this based off of the 2010 census, right? 9 years later, we're going to create a district for the 2020 election, and then sometime in 2021, you're going to redo the whole thing again and do it in 2022. Just try to process that in my mind, because obviously 9 years later, there's a lot of differences. And
unfortunately, you're correct.
I'm just wondering in my mind if that process is that what you're talking about.
Is it fair to say, Justin, that you're taking growth into consideration so that there might not be drastic changes?
Yeah, we are looking at growth as part of this. I'll also say that it's because of the reorganization of the board, and any board that goes through a reorganization would have to look at this.
No, yeah, I understand that. So I saw the estimates too, because then they get a little bit out of whack, as you have in the estimates. But I'm just talking about process. I'm not talking about the districts themselves or anything. I'm just talking about the process. So that's correct, okay?
That's okay. Correct.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, please.
Hi, I'm Patricia Soleil, and I've served for about 10 years on the Thousand Palms Community Council. And I'm interested in the fact you said that these districts that are trying to represent Latinos were about residences, but not necessarily the amount of people that turn out to vote. Is that correct?
We have to balance the total number of people that's required by law.
Yes.
We don't have to have the same number of registered voters in each area.
Okay. Well, does participation matter? Because I know during the census, a lot of people did not participate in the census.
Yeah, and so, I would say one factor that the board can consider is the number of registered voters, but it's one of those balancing criteria rather than one of those legal must-dos. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I need to know.
Anyone else? All right, then we'll close the public session for now and go to the board. And who would like to go first, or should we start at one end and go to the other? What's the brothers? Go ahead.
As we did in the zoning process previously, I think the main consideration is that we keep communities together, that there's natural boundaries that we need to respect. I know at one point in time, North Palm Springs was being considered to be part of another zone, and we asked the people who attended those meetings, do you feel like you are part of Palm Springs, or do you feel like you're part of Desert Hot Springs? And so that was, what schools do you go to? Where do you shop? I think that that's what's important, that we maintain our feel for communities.
Other comments?
Karen? Sure. Yes, so if you take a look at both of these maps, you can potentially have four district members that are from the city of Indio as they are drawn today. So that's my first comment. My second comment is on the Yucca map. There are some oddly drawn lines, like Zone 7 in Indio and La Quinta. I don't understand necessarily why they were. Now I do, right? You took into consideration Latinos, who votes, and something else.
We took into consideration a number of factors. So for example, in that section we looked at where, for example, the country clubs were, the golf courses. We looked at the population growth and changes that we've seen since 2010. We actually looked at the age of certain communities and neighborhoods in the area, particularly La Quinta Cove. And Demographically speaking, in a lot of ways, it doesn't much look like the country clubs that are kind of just to the southeast of it.
It just looks odd, right? If you look at 7 and 3, where the blue and the green intersect, if you take a look at zone 1 and 3, where the 111 near where it says Rancho Mirage, I would suggest we don't start drawing odd lines and try to avoid it as much as possible. Those are it. Those are my only comments.
Other comments?
I'm also a little bit concerned about what's about Indio and Coachella. And I think that little area there of Indian Wells, also on the Yucca Mat, the first comment about my concern about Indio and Coachella applies to both, but starting with the Yucca Mat, the fact that we do have Indio split up I thought that was a little bit difficult because you are, I can understand that there's, you have to have some compromises and that the physical, the barrier of the, I think 111 is a good barrier, but the other areas, that's a little bit of a concern. I like the Yucca map and what's going on in the Eastern Coachella Valley because I like the idea of having Oasis and Mecca and North Shore being one community because I believe that they have a lot of similar interests and concerns and needs. So I like those being in one. I like that Yucca map for that reason. But I am concerned about what's going on with Indian Wells where it has the barrier between 3 and 7, the green and the blue. Is that little blue that's coming down, is that Indian Wells or is that...
That's the La Quinta Cove.
That's La Quinta Cove. Oh, okay. Okay. And so La Quinta is split up there. Okay. Yeah, that little area there is a little bit of a concern. Pink or yellow and the blue, it's...
So if I could just address some of this and maybe suggestion, Indio is the largest city in the entire Coachella Valley and will have to be divided at least two, most likely into at least three, simply based on population alone. Now, if you'd like, I could come back to the next meeting with a third map that limits that to three, and addresses some of the other comments that I'm hearing here tonight. If that would be the board's request, I could come back with that third option.
I'd love to see it.
One of the things I notice is that the maps look funny when you look at the land and the geography. And it would be really nice if you could somehow do a dot map that showed population in some way so that we could, it might make a little more sense as to where things are split. Just another perspective. And I'm a little confused here too, but the Yucca map splits Palm Springs into three zones. And I would imagine some of the people in Palm Springs might not be too happy about that either, especially since the population of Palm Springs is only 45,000.
Right.
And there are some issues there, I think. But it is going to be a balancing act, and this is hearing comments.
I would like to see a map that puts particular cities to get, not necessarily the map, I want to see the data of what an Indio split only into zones would look like. A Palm Springs with their 40,000, add another, actually Cathedral City is a better example. Cathedral City with their large population be its own zone, adding whoever else is nearby. Based off of like cities, I'm really curious to see what the data would look like.
Sure, we can certainly give you a map of the city populations. And that will help explain some of this because, for example, Palm Springs has 44,000. It needs to add another 15,000. And if you go, there's only one direction it can really go to add more population. Mm-hmm. And that's into Cathedral City. Because north, if we want to start dividing Desert Hot Springs into, you know, pieces, or there's no population south and it's at the western end of the district. But we can certainly make a map that just shows the cities above our populations.
And the problem with going by cities is that the cities are not necessarily racially diverse either.
Correct.
And if you start maintaining city borders, I mean, those were created not to have equal diversity. They were just created by history. And what this tries to do is to bring some diversity into it also. And it is hard to balance the number of residents versus the number of voters.
But we will have reduction of city splits as a priority in this third map.
Well, at least that, or a good explanation of why. And I do think the south part of Palm Springs has a lot more in common with Rancho Mirage and Indian Wells than it does necessarily with the north part of Palm Springs, mm-hmm. especially if you're trying to create some maximizing the number of minority-majority districts or zones. So that's part of that.
I guess I should add, part of the reason why I ask for this is because certain cities have certain health care amenities and others don't. And some people, at least in the Desert Healthcare District, would identify with the city of Indio and the hospital and whatever else is in the city of Indio related to healthcare, right? So as far as like the healthcare conversation is, cities, I think, would have an easier time identifying where their emergency room is, like having a representative that can represent particular sections in that way, as far as healthcare.
Other comments?
Mark? Yes. By the way, this is difficult work and you've done a nice job. I would add one thing is I think just for our own benefit, it might be nice to have a dotted line of the existing district and the expanded district.
Okay. We can certainly add that to the maps.
Is there any other comments either from the board or if there any public comment, we could take it now. You've already spoken. Only people that haven't spoken.
Okay.
I'm sorry. If anybody else would like to speak, remember this is the first of four public sessions, and we'll have lots more maps to comment about later. So, anybody else? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Move on now to the Desert Healthcare District CEO report.
Okay, wanted to remind the board that we're in the process of the CEO recruiting search, and the recruiting firm is in the last week of receiving the applications. So April 29th is the cutoff for receiving applications for the position. The recruiter will then be finishing up the interviewing process and providing a listing or a report by May 6th. So we would be looking then to get together with the board, bring them together for a review of the list of candidates. And so we'll need to be scheduling a meeting for that also in May, along with these other meetings that we're doing. So we're hoping to possibly do it same time as we were doing the appointment. But it doesn't look like that day may work, so we'll have to look at another possibility. So we'll be reaching out to the board to schedule a date for that.
Anything else?
That's it.
I'd like to ask Michelle Finney to give a Desert Regional Medical Center CEO report.
Hi, I'd like to update you on a few things that are going on at Desert Regional Medical Center. First, I want to share with you that the first quarter of this year has been a relatively busy year for the medical center. We actually saw a 2.2% growth in admissions to the facility. And I know that may not sound like a large number, but it's pretty significant. It's about 10 average daily census higher than the facility ran the prior year. We did see a significant influx of flu-related illnesses in our emergency room department. However, on that particular element, we actually saw lower acuity in the admission side. So although we saw much more flu, we actually ended up admitting less individuals with flu-related symptoms. I did want to share with you that today the LA County Department of Health issued an alert that they have a measles outbreak in LA County. So all facilities have been put on notice that they really need to make sure that they're screening individuals that present to the facility with a fever or with a rash. And we will be watching that very closely. From an accreditation and quality standpoint, over the last month, we did recertify with the Joint Commission our advanced heart failure program. So that means we've met these higher level criteria for designation as a center of excellence in advanced heart failure. And today we actually completed our ACGME institutional site visit. And just to give you an idea, that's the teaching program. And that's what certifies the hospital to be a location in which can teach residents. Now, we've been teaching residents under an osteopathic program, but we've converted the program to an MD program. We have been previously certified by ACGME, but your first year is considered your initial conditional year, and then they come back for review, and then they give you full accreditation. So that's the review that we just completed, was to secure that full accreditation for our various training programs. And to refresh your memory, we currently have about 120 residents in our teaching program. So from plan improvements, we are going through a fire alarm system upgrade, and that is a facility-wide upgrade where we will be modernizing our fire system, and it's the how the system alarms, how it detects, how the hearing impaired, you'll have flashing lights, it's some of the audible. So that'll take a couple more weeks before that is complete. And upon that completion, we will then bring back into service the Sinatra elevator that has been recently rebuilt. So we needed to have the fire alarm system completed before the state would grant us the permits needed for the actual putting the elevator back into service. So I think you know we're systematically rebuilding the elevators within the building, starting with those that tend to have more maintenance requirements. I also want to share with you that now that we're starting to go into the slower summer month seasons, we'll be resuming our emergency room department remodel. It's what we call our ED remodel phase two, and that will involve the remodel of our triage areas, our intake areas, the waiting room areas, as well as the fast track patient care areas. And so we're anticipating June when we'll resume that particular project. We did suspend it over the busier season in the first quarter, and it was probably a good thing given some of the census increases we saw on both the ED and the inpatient. So from a community activity standpoint, some of you, I hope, may have seen that we released our Community Built on Care campaign, and that's a TV campaign, a print media campaign, as well as some radio campaign. And I just want to brag a little bit, because a lot of the TV spots that you'll see are actual Desert Region Medical Center patients, employees, and physicians. And in the month of March, we continue to participate in a number of community events. We participated in 4 sponsored events, and we offered 11 community outreach classes. So, any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm now going to very briefly give a report from the Director Rogers, and I attended the Desert Regional Medical Center Governing Board meeting. It was a relatively short meeting, and most of it was the CEO report, which was you just heard. I do want to highlight a couple of things. One is that there were no new cases opened up from the California Department of Public Health, which is always good news. And there was also a completion of a review of a complaint from that the Joint Commission looked into, and there were no deficiencies found with that. already mentioned the CME. For those of you who are physicians, mid-March is always the time of year that we think of the residency match. And one of the questions I asked was, how do we do on the match? And we did very well. All of the slots were filled by really good people, and that's good. Not all hospitals do that. And then finally, I would just mention that the patient experience scores that are done every month, people are surveyed who have been in the hospital, and they return it, and we continue to see an increase in patient satisfaction, which is good. Did you want to add anything?
No, that's excellent. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We now move on to the Finance, Administration, Real Estate, Legal, and at least for now, Hospital Governance and Oversight Committee.
On page 57 and 60 are the minutes of the last meeting. I don't know if anybody has any questions. Generally not. If you come up with them, I'm going to go to the next two items to save time. On 61 to 80, we have a leasing proposal for the Las Palmas Medical Plaza, and the committee looked at that and thought that would be fine and recommended approval. So I would move the lease at the Las Palmas Medical Plaza. It's a 5-year agreement.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Director Borja?
Yes.
Director Perez-Gil?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Delara?
Yes.
And President Zendel?
Yes.
The next item on 81 to 89 is a strategic planning proposal. We actually had a meeting with Kaufman Hall, who has consulted with the healthcare district in the past and is going to do so in the future. It's included in our annual budget, and it's priced not to exceed $90,000. Kaufman Hall is probably as well experienced as anybody in California for this. The committee reviewed this and recommended approval. Does anybody have any questions?
You have a motion?
Oh, I should speak into the mic. Sorry. I really apologize. Anyways, the Kaufman Hall proposal's here, and the fiscal impact, which is budgeted, is $90,000. And we're reviewed it.
I'd like to make a motion.
And I would move its approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call.
Yeah, I have a...
Oh, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Fire.
I have a question. What are the exact deliverables from Kaufman Hall that we can expect?
Three,
is it like the actual pamphlets?
Three study sessions, the first one which we had today.
Okay. No, that today was not part of this. It was.
It is. I didn't realize earlier when you were asking, that is part of today.
So okay. Then never mind.
Okay. Any other discussion? Questions? Roll call.
Director Borja?
Can you come back to me real quick?
Director Perez-Gil?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Delara?
Yes.
President Zendel?
Yes.
And Director Borja?
Yes.
Okay, the next item is Strategic Planning Committee, which did not meet last month. So we'll move on to the Program Committee. Director Rogers.
Yes, thank you. We are in the process of requesting volunteers to sit with the Program Committee. That announcement is out, published on our website. It is available to any person residing in the district within the new boundaries as well. If you look at pages 90 and 92 on the agenda, you'll see the grant proposals under development. And we had scheduled a special meeting on April 29th, but that has been rescheduled, and we will let you know the next date.
Okay, page 90 are the grant proposals under development. This is Donna.
You'll notice that we do have quite a few, some letters of interest that are under.
Can you use the mic, please?
Sorry. We have a few letters of interest that have
in process through our new grant management system. There are some that have been invited to submit a full application, so that's in the process in the works. We do some have some applications that are being reviewed and being scored. And there's, like Dr. Rogers mentioned, the April 29th special meeting has not been canceled, so it's May 21st. Hopefully bring just about all of these applications to the program committee for review and then to the board. Just want to make one mention on Live to Rise that we're going to be reviewing to pull out that proposal, and we're starting a new one covering some other avenues. Other than that, any other questions?
I presume we'll be discussing during the foundation meeting more on the homelessness issue initiative. Any other questions?
Yes. In the Desert AIDS project, status stage one LOI, or sorry, Desert AIDS project, you say that other items include the funding request for advertising dollars, support for mobile testing vans, smart car salaries, event sponsorships, and the support of the doc. Are these things we've funded in the past? Is this new to this proposal?
Well, we funded in the past with Desert AIDS Project. We had two separate grants. One was for the public health liaisons to go out to the physician's offices to convince them to scrutinize testing for HIV and AIDS. And the second was $800,000 for the doc. That was a three-year grant that was a step down. We started out high and went down low, and they were at the end of the third year, they were showing that they were financially sound. So yes.
This is a letter of interest, though, not a proposal.
Is this, would this be for the whole Coachella Valley or just the Eastern Coachella Valley?
When they originally were talking to us, they were looking at the Eastern Coachella Valley, concentrating in those specific populations, but we did reiterate with them that we have a small amount of funding available, $100,000, so it has to be adjusted.
Thank you. I do have one more question about Martha's Village and Kitchen. So the homeless encampment that was on tribal land in Indio Coachella, sort of right in the middle of that area, the people have been moved from the tribal's property to the outer edge of that property. I don't know exactly where 100% of them ended up, but there are folks that are now on the outside of the property. I drove by on my way here. There's now people inside of the property once more. And so I would like to know if in the last 2 months, Martha's Village and Kitchen and the CV Rescue Mission had any vacancies in their beds. And I don't know if that's something we can ask. And then my other question is, their proposal is for residents of Western Coachella Valley. Do we know when we start, or when we can start funding them for Eastern Coachella Valley residents?
Well, we do have $300,000 funds that are available at Galilee Center.
Right.
Are you going to address this?
Yes. Donna, can you talk into the mic a little bit closer, please?
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Is this $300,000 available this fiscal year or next fiscal year or both?
Both. Well, it is if the board approves the $300,000 in the next fiscal year budget. Yes, it's anticipated to be included in both years and future years as well, as long as the board is approving each year in that budget.
Just a point of clarification, if both Martha's Village and CV Rescue Mission want us to fund programs in the West Valley so that the West Valley doesn't send people to their facilities and fill their beds so they can't take the people that are locally around them. So a lot of the funding that has to do with homelessness in the West Valley is to prevent the people for the West Valley going to the East Valley and filling those beds. They don't have the beds.
Right.
And so that's a big thing. Now, they did just get a big grant, HEAP funding grant, and such, but they very much want us to take care of, quote, our own people in the West Valley so that they can concentrate on the people in the East. Are we finished with that? Matt, please. You want to introduce Senator?
Yeah, next on the agenda is the Loma Linda University Health Dream Homes Initiative. Is Donna, will you introduce them?
Yes. Hi, everybody. Just a little quick update on in early 2017, there were some very initial discussions with leadership at the city of Cathedral City regarding a place-based initiative targeting the Dream Homes area, very similar to what we did in the Desert Highland Gaming Community, which was really successful. So we met with the leadership of the city of Cathedral City, El Sol, Neighborhood Education Center, Loma Linda University, Institute for Community Partnerships. And today we have Chrissy Irani and Megan Daly who will be presenting on the results of this place-based initiative, 18-month place-based initiative that took place in the Dream Homes community of the city of Cathedral City. So Chrissy, the floor is yours.
Thank you. So again, my name is Chrissy Irani. I work as a research analyst at the Institute for Community Partnerships, and I appreciate you allowing us to come speak with you today and giving us this time. So we're excited to share all the great work that the community health workers did. So these are two of our community health workers. I just want to start with their picture here. They're at a community health fair event that they really championed. We made sure that this came through, and it was a great achievement. So just wanted to show that there are focus here. And of course, like Alejandro mentioned, these are our partners that we worked with, of course, from Cathedral City. Mr. Vincent Lopez, who's here, really helped us, and Donna Craig and my boss, Dr. Belliard, all worked together to bring it to fruition. So when talking about the project scope, we actually made sure we had two main aims, specifically training our five community health workers that came from their own community to work in their own community. That was a really strong point that we wanted to emphasize. They went ahead and trained at our San Manuel Gateway College, and they did field work with El Sol, of course, led by Leticia Olvera. And they did pilot projects to make sure they were comfortable with the field work, and then of course went out into the field and did their community health assessment. So in addition to those two main aims, the community health workers really had a lot of experience, and we felt that they were empowered in the work that they did. They did a lot of community outreach, which of course was expected, but not necessarily built into the program. It was something that came about naturally through the community health workers' discussions with community members. They made sure that they were inspired by what the community members were saying and went out and focused on what services were needed. There was a resource list that was created, so when the community health workers were going house to house, they made sure they shared those resources specifically relating to what each household required or needed. They also worked with a lot of our community or public health students, so that's the picture on the left. So it was really a team effort. So we actually decided to focus a lot on social determinants of health, and of course there's that long list of social determinants, but we focused on this list here also because of what we heard from the community, and specifically health, behavior, economy, and employment were some of the major topics that were currently came up and were discussed by community members and the CHWs. And again, health behavior, we found that a lot of the responses could be managed with lifestyle disease management. That's something we want to focus on in our recommendations. And of course, economic issues are something that affects all social determinants across the board. So that's something we really want to look for as a priority in our recommendations in the future as well. So when we were speaking with the community, again, house-to-house visits, we asked the community members what they felt was a priority need and what their assets were. So a lot of people talked about the park, of course, the need, and we agree that's something that we want the community members to be able to get out into the community and have some exercise, things like that. We had a lot of discussions and community forums with the police chief and the community, the police department. So that was another point of discussion. And as you can see, the speed bumps, less crime were talked about. The CB Link was a major asset that everybody talked about too, with the majority. And the fact that there were a lot of long-term residents in the community, they lived there multiple generations, raised many family members there. So that's a strong point. So our community health workers, many of whom are here today, really became leaders in their community, in the Dream Homes neighborhood. They ended up deciding, according to what their findings were, what they'd really like to work on. Again, the community health fair, they brought resources from the city, like the yard maintenance program, and again, bringing specific resources to the community. They organized multiple meetings, and again, presented to the city and other entities. So this is a picture of the vet. Joined you all and shared her unique viewpoint and all of her experiences, and I thought maybe she could say a word or two about her experience specifically in this project. So I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about really championing the health fair. I think that was really an effort from the community health workers. So how did you feel about really wanting to bring that to the community?
Well, all of us decided that it was something that our community can use.
You got to be close to the mic. Though.
That would benefit our community. And we all got together and saw how we could make it happen. Our original date of March 17th was not possible, because we wanted to originally have it at the Home Depot, and they were going to let us use a couple of places, a couple of parking lots, but then we had to ask for a permit and stuff, so we didn't have the money for that. So then we went back to the school. We Chris helped us with the superintendent of the school to get us the place at El Caliente. The girls went out, measured everything, saw where we were going to put everybody, and we had a lot of people come out to support the community. There was about 40 vendors, I think, that showed up, and there was about 200 people that came out to do testing, and I think that was a good thing for our community.
Great.
Yeah, and that, I feel like that was a really collaborative effort. The CHWs led it, but our students also were really excited about taking part as well. So they not only helped with the research theory side of the project, but they also were interested in getting out into the community. And then I'd like to ask Melissa to come up too and talk a little bit about... I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about your interactions from house to house, specifically how you felt with each household member.
Okay. So it was nice to be able to talk to everyone and for them to be able to see you, and even while driving down the street, say hi to you. A lot of the resources we would be bringing, like something as simple as bringing them a resource list or already existing programs that the city has that they were unaware of, really helped connect better with them, because they saw that we weren't there just to complete our numbers and surveys, but we were interested in the education they had of their city and resources.
Okay. Thank you. And then I'd like to ask Lydia to come up also and talk about. She really interacted a lot with the vendors for the health fair, and really brought together a lot of different entities. And she made sure we spoke with code compliance too, so she brought together everybody in that way for our team. So you could talk about that, or in general, what you felt about the project?
Well, in general, as far as with the project,
I really fell in love with this project as far as being able to engage the community with our chief of police, the city, and just really seeing both sides of the picture as far as what happens with the police department and understanding what their responsibilities were and letting the community understand why certain things happen. And I'll just give you an example. At our community forum, you know, they were saying that we should have more police presence and so on, and that we have cars running the traffic lights, I mean the stop signs and so on. And so the chief of police says, okay, you know what you're asking for, don't you? And so he sure did it. He did it the next day, and there were a lot of people that were stopped. But we forewarned them, and we did let them know, you know, what was going to happen. But it was the community that asked for that, and so it was important for us to be able to engage. And Vince, where are you? Oh, there he is. Vince and Deanna, they were just so terrific. The city, you know, we couldn't do it without them. They were there for us. You know, we saw the project as far as needing to clean up the neighborhood. And that was the request from the community. That's what they were asking for, too. And so we went, and I talked to Vince, and he says, well, let me have you talk to Deanna. So all of us went in, the community health workers and everyone, and so she presented how it would work better. You know, we had an idea, but she came up with a better idea. And so we kind of just engaged everyone together and worked on it, and it was really a terrific project. And, you know, we got the education from Loma Linda and from everyone, but just engaging and understanding what resources that the community doesn't know that we have, and it's important for us to be able and get it out to them. And if we don't have something, then let's present it to Desert Healthcare Center or someone that can bring it into us. So thank you very much. And I kind of went off on different areas, but there was so much to this project. And thank you, Alejandro, for always being there for us too, and everyone. So thank you.
Thank you.
So I just kind of a couple more slides to look at ahead, and then we'll look at some recommendations. I just want to mention that 3 out of the 5 of our community health workers are actually.
We would like to maybe get the city's point of view. So I have Mr. John Corella here, who started. He was one of the key individuals that we met with early on from the city, and was one of the key players in making this project happen. So, Mr. John Corella, you can share a couple of words with us.
Thank you. And you made the mistake of giving me a microphone. I want to introduce, first of all, our Mayor Pro Tem, John Aguilar, in the back. John, if you can raise your hand. And then also Vince is right in front of him. But it all starts with the support of our city council. And we started with a small meeting, knowing that that area needed a park. So we got a group of the residents over there in City Hall. And we talked about what was needed, what do they want. And it came out to be a park, one of the number one items that was listed on there. And so one of the ideas was, if anyone's offering grants, we'd go for it. So we submitted a grant to the Desert Healthcare, which may not have been in the wheelhouse of what they were looking for, but it's amazing how these seeds get planted and they blossom into different things that you don't even know where they're gonna go. So with the support of Donna and Alejandro, this thing blossomed into a place-based initiative. And all of a sudden, Loma Linda University got involved, El Sol got involved, and it grew, and the residents embraced it. And we're continually communicating with the residents, and you know, I can speak on and on, but I'll wrap this up in stating that we are pursuing a park grant. City Council has authorized us to get a grant writer, a very good grant writer on the job. Proposition 64 has issued out the potential for up to an $8.5 million grant for that area, for that park. So we're going to pursue it. There's no guarantee, but we think we've really got some good start in this process because of the place-based initiative. We've already been had outreach with the community. We've had some few meetings. And we're also going to ask you to help us with our localized meetings in our park planning. So these were all the seeds, and out of this can come an actual facility, and then we can get some programs, and we hope to partner with Desert Healthcare on a lot of aspects of that. So we appreciate it, and we appreciate our city council support to allow staff, Vince and I, to participate in this process. So good job to all of you.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to make sure I highlight on this slide that three of our five community health workers are still working as community health workers in their own community. And we have four major recommendations: education, workforce development, access to healthy foods and exercise, recreation, and of course, continued community engagement. We really feel that the community health workers are an important, really strong base that we can work off of, and we want to ask you as the board as well how we can further support community health workers. I wanted to also introduce Megan Daly, who's in our leadership as well at ICP. We also created this poster that we'd like to share with you, and I'll let you finish.
Okay, make this very quick, but I'm the associate director for the Institute, and I'm also over community benefit for our four licensed hospitals. We were selected nationally out of about 400 applicants to a poster presentation at the Association for Community Health Improvement to talk about this project. And what I want to say to you all today is how much it means to Loma Linda to really come into the community and partner with the multi-sector partners that really make this work. We cannot and we should not come in and do this on our own. We so appreciate that. And it was nationally recognized as a unique project because it had the city involved. It had the Desert Healthcare District, it had El Sol and Loma Linda, so it was a very interesting mix of a multi-sector partnership. So I just want to shout that out because that was a very exciting thing for us at the American Hospital Association's conference. And also just want to say to you, Loma Linda is very interested in our work here and working with you in the community and empowering communities. We really learned a lot from the model of coming in and providing that technical assistance in the background while the community health workers did this incredible work with the community. And out of that came unexpected things like civic empowerment through the community forums. That was not planned, and it felt so good to work with that community to help empower their voice and their relationship to the city. And we are just really grateful for that partnership. And we're here to continue that work, and yeah, very, very glad to see you tonight and to be able to talk to you a little bit about this. So thank you for letting us present. We also want to mention the health and lifestyle outcomes in your booklets that we gave in the report are really supporting that argument for the park, as they are really the background context to the life, the actual kind of outcomes that help justify why this community is asking for this kind of recreational safe place. And so we appreciate that, that there's a connectivity there, and you can look at that report for the actual study outcomes.
President Zendel, if I may just mention that this was kind of a long couple of years, and I want to give a shout out to Mark and Kate Hazen because they would support the staff quite a bit in helping us with this place-based initiative.
Okay, I want to turn to Alejandro to talk about NEOP, right?
Yes, sir. So NEOP, the acronym for Nutrition Education and Obesity Prevention, that was one of our county-funded grants that was also a place-based initiative focused in the city of Desert Hot Springs, where myself and then eventually Vanessa were targeting and empowering local residents through nutrition education and obesity prevention efforts. The program, the NEOP, we were funded in 2014 with four subcontractors, and this year we was the first year that we only had one subcontractor, which was us at the Desert Healthcare District. And Vanessa and myself continue to work on the program. The majority of the work is being done by Vanessa. I help more on an administrative role. We had great successes with the program. You know, we received multiple invitations to speak at the state conference that NEOP puts on, and we received national recognition for two of our programs, which one of them was our community garden, and the other one was the sensory pathway that Vanessa worked with one of our local schools there in Desert Hot Springs to work with their students that need, special needs students that had any kind of hyperactive, you know, disease. So it was a really good recognition from NEOP, and we were approached to continue the grant. They love the relationship. They see us as an entity that could bring multiple organizations together to cause change in the neighborhood. So Vanessa is here to present to you the new vision for the NEOP program. They're moving away from direct health education classes, and now they're starting to focus on policy systems and environmental changes. And Vanessa is here to speak to you a little bit about what that vision is for the next 3 years, which the Riverside University Health System is proposing for us at this time.
Thank you, Alejandro. Hello, everyone. Closer?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, Hi. Everyone. Hello. So I am Vanessa Smith, and so for this year, like Alejandro mentioned, we've had a lot of success working and creating partnerships with the school district, then moving forward with individual schools, you know, to create community school gardens, and then from there, you know, my prized possession of the sensory pathway. And now NEOP is moving forward into the CalFresh Healthy Living, a new name. And we are going to be focusing on policy systems and environmental changes. And our task would be to improve the citizens' access to nutritious and healthy food. And we are kind of trying to create the same partnership that we made with the schools, but transition over to working with food banks and food pantries. We've already met with Fine Food Bank, and they're on board. One being that, you know, they're understaffed, so they would prefer to have another person to help. And under this grant, we would be creating assessments, you know, what the need is out in the community, helping with signage, educational materials to make nutritious food more appealing. And it would cost us nothing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a good number.
Anything else?
No.
Okay.
Well, so what staff is asking for here is direction, whether the board would like to move forward with, you know, the transition that would go from the NEOP program that we've been working with. It's been very successful with the partnerships that Vanessa has spoken about, and moving into what is the county is proposing for this CalFresh Healthy Living. And staff would recommend going forward with that, working with the county to develop that program. It would provide $100,000 a year for 3 years, and that's a minimum. And it's a reimbursement process, so there's no financial commitment internally from the district. So we're asking direction from the board to approve going forward with.
I just have a question. I don't hear a downside.
I don't believe there is any.
Okay, so I'll move that we accept the recommendation.
I just, I guess I'm just optimistic that this could actually be extended to another school district beyond the Palm Springs Unified School District. Is that a possibility?
Something that I wanted to mention is that they're moving away from a place-based initiative solely focused on Desert Hot Springs, and now Vanessa would be able to work with any food pantry within the Coachella Valley to provide that technical assistance and work with them to provide a better consumer experience and also empower the consumer so they have a little bit more information at their disposal when they're making those food choices as they're moving through those food lines at the different food pantries throughout the Coachella Valley. So that is one key difference, that we're moving away from Desert Hot Springs and we're able to provide this resource to any food pantry within the Coachella Valley.
Thank you.
And it's also developing like policy in that that can be, you know, standardized, you know, between the food pantries and food banks and that. So so it's really a favorable project.
So.
something we heard at the listening sessions that have been happening.
Something that we heard in the listening sessions that have been happening in the two that I attended. People were interested in figuring out how to cook the food that they get to make decisions around their specific health needed diets. Is that something for the future in this program?
What we could do and something that Vanessa could work on.
You don't have to add it in. I'm just curious.
Yeah, we could. We do provide not cooking demonstrations, but if the food pantry does have a space where we could do that, Vanessa could definitely organize a cooking demonstration class, which we have done in NEOP, and also provide cookbooks and also recipes for the produce that are being dispensed at that particular time at that food pantry. So a lot of people would get, you know, bok choy, and they say, well, what do I do with it? And then we'll be able to provide them a recipe so they can try it at home.
Right, and I really do want to emphasize that we do provide a lot of educational materials. So, I mean, considering that it's a busy area of food banks, the food's already there, kind of giving them the educational materials and separating, let's say, unhealthy food from the healthy food, because to me, personally, that's the most important step to begin with, is having them take a tomato rather than a piece of cake that's on the counter.
I'd like to second the motion and also ask, what is one serving of vegetables like? And I've seen Alejandro talk to children and he'll ask that question, and this is the answer.
That's a cup.
Uh-huh.
That's a half a cup.
Right.
All right, we've had a motion and a second. Is there any more discussion? Hearing none, we'll have a roll call.
So we have... We're going to start with Director Borja.
Aye, yes.
Director Perez-Gale.
Aye.
Director Rogers.
Yes.
Director
Matthews. Yes.
Vice President
DeLauro.
Yes.
And President
Zeta.
Yes.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. Okay.
And next we have the Board Staff Communications Policy and Ad Hoc Committee. I'm going to turn it over to Vice President Leticia DeLauro, who is the chair of the committee.
Okay. Well, we covered a lot of ground on that meeting. And
You need a mic.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
We covered a lot of information on that day, things that we had talked about before that hopefully we can finally resolve. Starting with old business, we have been talking with Roush Communications about a workshop that we have been talking about that was first proposed to improve how the board can work better together, better communication with our staff, with each other. And we are finally at the point where we are moving forward to have this workshop scheduled sometime in May or June. So that's another meeting to add to our calendars. And we hope that we can find a convenient time for everyone. The next item that we've talked about in the past is the revision of the ticket policy. This is actually an action item for today. And we had this item come back to the committee because at the last board meeting, there was some confusion about the policy that we thought we had agreed to or understood and then adopted, but we didn't, obviously. So the issue was that there was confusion about if we purchased a table at events, whether those seats would count towards the allocation that we had for board members, which was, I believe, $1,000 previously. So we learned from council on that day that they would, and so we decided to, well, the board decided to put it back to the committee to review it to be a little bit more acceptable to everyone. So what we are recommending today is that the ticket policy be changed to actually increase the budget to $2,500 per board member per year. So this would create a budget item of $20,000. And this would eliminate the need to purchase any tables for any events. The item that President Zendel brought up at the meeting is that this should not, this actually requires that we look at the gift guidelines developing for the district board members that serve on the Desert Regional Medical Center Governing Board, because there are many more events that apply to that committee. So we probably will be talking about that in the future. Let's see, and we also are recommending that we continue for the current fiscal year that will be ending June 30th, that we continue with our $500 per director cap, so that we do not have to make any changes to our budget. Let's see, appointments to duties and committees.
Well, if we can hold on that one, okay. And then just dispense with that.
For the action.
If the policy is acceptable to the board, there's a resolution on page 104, that's resolution 1905, which we attach the policy to, and if that's acceptable, the board could consider that resolution and discuss the policy in that context, if you would. Mm-hmm. So we'll get a motion for that.
Is there discussion?
Yeah, first of all, is there a discussion? Can I just clarify something first a little bit? And Jeff, you're going to have to help me here. There are different kinds of events. If an event, if a director wants to attend an event that meets the criteria for the benefit of the district and the health of the community, et cetera, and they can ask the coordinator, in this case it is the CEO or a designee, to purchase a ticket for that event for themselves and a guest. And that would then be purchased and it would count against their $2,500 allotment, and it would not be considered a gift. It would not have to be reported as a gift on the 700 form. But it would have to be reported by the district on the forms that it fills out.
On the
802
form. Which will be on the website. So it's more of a disclosure issue. It's not considered a gift.
Right. There also was some clarification that if a nonprofit or a political group wants to invite an individual board member not going through the district, it can do that, and it also doesn't count as a gift if it meets certain criteria.
Yes, and that's included in the amended policy.
Right. And then just to clarify something that Leticia said, the members of the governing board of the hospital who are representing the district, if they accept a ticket to attend an event as a governing board member, they have to report, if it's over $50, they have to report it as a gift, and there is a limit of $500 a year, this year anyway, and that would be up to the board member, individual board member, to report it on their form 700, or they could pay the hospital for the ticket within 30 days and it wouldn't count.
That's correct.
And again, that has nothing to do with the district gift policy.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, ticket distribution.
Ticket distribution policy. So before we open discussion, is there a motion to adopt?
I move to adopt the resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, now discussion. Carol.
Well, I think you all know that I have been against a limit on ticket policy. I think that it is incumbent on all of us to represent this district to the community. At community events is the best way to do it. I was at the Mizell Senior Center event, and people there at my table said, it's so great to see district representatives at meetings. We haven't seen such participation in public like that in the past. We go to events that benefit nonprofits in the community and other major organizations sponsor tables of 10, and I know it would be absolutely no problem filling up a table of 10. I go to an organization last week, and our own RAP Foundation had a table of 10 who has less square miles to cover than we do as an organization. I also do not feel comfortable accepting tickets as gifts from the nonprofits that we fund. I think that is looks like a bribe, and I feel very uncomfortable doing that. So I am against this idea. I think we should have unlimited, up to a certain point, budget for as many functions as district members can go to along with staff.
Two things that I want to add that I forgot to mention earlier is that, well, first of all, I completely agree that as representatives of our community, we have to do our best to attend as many events as we can. Some of those do require a fee, others do not, and I definitely take that into consideration while I look at, when I look at this, and also about my own resources as well. So those are things that I want to do my best to be accessible. And I think we are taking into account some of the comments that we received in the past to reach this level of $2,500, and we can revisit it in a year. I think that's something that we should consider to see how we did. If everybody feels comfortable with this or not, then we could look at it as just put it as on a calendar item to look at it in a year. But one of the things that Director Zendel mentioned at the meeting is that as part of accepting tickets for some of these events, it's incumbent on us to report at our board meetings that we attended these meetings to make sure that we are letting people that are in the audience know that we are doing our best to attend some of these community events. And the other item that came up at the committee meeting was the fact that I believe that there are so many different parts to the Form 700 now that I thought I understood it, and I'm learning that there's many more things that I have to learn. So at some point in the future, I do think it's incumbent on us to all learn as much as we can about the Form 700 so that we are better prepared to fill it out and not encounter any problems.
Any other comments? Okay, I would just add two comments. One is that we have a grant process for giving money to the nonprofits that we support as a district. And it's a rigorous process, and it looks at what the needs are, and we do it that way. And secondly, when we buy tickets, we are spending taxpayer money. And the more money we spend on events, the less money we have to spend on grants. I think $2,500 is a good balance, and as the Vice President said, we can revisit that amount in the future if that's not enough. So that's my comment. Is there any other comment? If not, we'll do a roll call.
I have one more comment.
Sure.
This ticket policy is brand new. This is something that we haven't done in the past. It came up a few years ago with our new CEO and was even more restrictive. When I first came on the board, this district bought tables of 10, encouraged as many events that board members could attend. So this is a new policy.
Any other comments?
Excuse me, who made the motion?
I did.
Director Borja?
Yes.
Director Carrasco?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
No.
Director Matthews?
Abstain.
Vice President DeLauro?
Yes.
And President Zendel?
Yes. And now do we have to approve the resolution too, or was that the resolution?
That was the resolution.
Okay.
I motioned the resolution.
Well, we already did it, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, done.
Okay, now move on to the next item, which is item 5. Go ahead.
Okay, so the next item.
Revised appointment and duties of committee policy.
Okay. Okay, so we have revision, let's see. There was a discussion about the Governance and Oversight Committee and those duties falling to the Finance and Accounting Committee. Is that where we're at? I'm sorry, I've lost track of where we're at.
Page 106.
Page 106, okay.
Yeah.
And one thing that I'm going to propose is in the future we look at a better system to be able to click on it and it'll take us to it instead of having to
So we do have a we have a draft proposal. Okay, I just need to present that to our interim CEO. Okay.
That would be
for an agenda manager program.
And we've been looking at this with the whole revamp of the website and all of that. So.
Okay, so the appointment of and duties of committees. So we have made some changes as requested at the last board meeting. We are looking at, the full board and hospital governance committee, oversight committee, renaming that to being the hospital lease committee, and that they would meet on a quarterly basis, and that they would be addressing lease oversight issues. The committee also recommended the strategic planning committees would be meeting quarterly instead of monthly meetings. And on the actual revisions, we have, is there anything that you had this document before? Is there any comments from the board members that you want to address specifically? Because there's some things that we've talked about in the past, and I don't want to go through each one.
If I could just add that the reason we're changing the name of the lease, the Hospital Governance and Oversight Committee, is that it really was not accurate of what we did. It was really created to help with oversight of the lease. And one of the main reasons to oversee the lease has to do with the building inspection. And there are other items in the lease that periodically need to be looked at, and the board might ask the committee to do that. And so it was decided, it had first been put in the finance committee, and it's just too much for them to do. And so we're going to recreate the hospital committee, but we're going to just have it, we'll call it Hospital Lease Oversight Committee. It will meet quarterly or as often as needed. Also, we took out of the bylaws or somewhere the fact that at one point it said that the two directors appointed to the Desert Regional Medical Center Governing Board had to be members of the Hospital Governance and Oversight Committee, which it was called, now called Hospital Lease and Oversight Committee. And we took that out altogether, so it's gone.
So that person would not have, if you serve on the Board of Governance, you don't have to serve on the committee.
Right.
So let's see. Is there any other questions or comments from the board about the changes that we have recommended for approval for today?
Any comments? Okay.
It's not related to the comments here, but I don't know when else to bring it.
Well, we have a motion in front of us. Does it have to do with this?
No.
Okay, then let's wait. Are there any other questions on this? If not, we can take a roll call on the, I guess this time, there's both the policy and the bylaws. We're really voting on both, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so if there's no more discussion, we'll go ahead and take a roll call.
So do we have a motion?
Vice President DeLaura made the motion, I seconded it.
Okay, I did.
Okay, thank you. So we have Director Borja?
Yes.
Director Perezio?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President DeLaura?
Yes.
And President Zinn?
Yes. Okay. And then item seven?
The next item, it's the revision of the stipend compensation policy and resolution. We talked about this before. Council actually summarized it very well at the last meeting. Basically is that we are going to be changing our policy to allow for 6 meetings per month that board members can receive the stipend. And we made some changes to the language that in section A5, regarding health fairs and type of events, we removed health fairs because we believe that those are more social items, so that you shouldn't be receiving a stipend for those.
But if there is a formal meeting that is requested by the CEO to have a member of the board attend those meetings, and I believe that they will qualify for the stipend. And also, if you are at a training, like many of us have gone to Sacramento, if there's training more than one day, that the stipend would apply for only the training itself, even if it's more than one day. Let's see. And so those were the main changes that we made. And the increase, this would actually take effect on July 1st. And the legislation does say that every year the amount would go up by 5%. But that's on a calendar year, right?
Well, it wouldn't be effective until January 1st of next year.
The following
year. 5%.
Yeah. An anniversary as of January 2020, yes. It would be January 2021.
And what we're asking you tonight is we would first bring back at the next board meeting the resolution basically expanding from 5 to 6 meetings that would be eligible compensation. We'll bring that resolution back, and it'll include the guidelines that are on what page 122 on 142 of 144. So I don't know, that's in your packet. I don't know if it's the same thing on the
computer. 142 and 143.
Yeah, those are the guidelines, and so the resolution would adopt those guidelines and increase the meeting compensation from eligible meeting compensation from 5 to 6. And then additionally, at the next meeting, we would bring back an ordinance that would allow that per meeting to be increased a total of $5, which is the equivalent of 5%. But that will not take effect until January 1st. But in order to bring you an ordinance, we have to follow a notice process in the local newspaper. And so what we would ask you to do tonight is direct staff to go ahead and publish the appropriate notice of the ordinance and consideration of the 5% increase at the next meeting. So that's the only action we're asking you tonight, but we did want to share with you the guidelines and the process where we would adopt a resolution and then an ordinance.
So there's only one action item. It's for directing staff to do that.
To bring back the ordinance.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not about the increasing stipend compensation.
Well, that'll we wanted you to look at the policy and approve the policy tonight.
Okay.
And make sure you feel comfortable with that. And then once that's done, we'll bring back the resolution, which will include the guidelines at the next meeting.
Okay.
Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Is there any other discussion?
I have a question. It has to do with ethics training. It says attendance at ethics training. Sometimes ethics training is, 4 hours or so online. Is that part of it? Is that physical
yes.
attendance or online?
Online. Yes, as long as you complete it, you can get a certificate. So, yes.
Any other discussion? Roll call.
Director Borja?
Yes.
Director Perezquio?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President DeLauro?
Yes.
And President Zell?
Yes. Okay. The item of old business, I believe, is a moot point now because we've changed the policy. Is that correct, Attorney?
Well, it's not necessary. You can still consider it, but it, because of the new policy, each director can request up to 2 tickets, so you don't have to buy a table.
So I would move that this item be withdrawn. Is there any objection to withdrawing the item? It's L1A through E. There's no objection, we'll withdraw it then. And marketing and communication plan?
Hi. So I wanted to give you an update on the website redesign and as part of the rebranding effort. We are in the final stretch of launching the new website. This opening date is actually Monday, the 29th. So this week we're working on moving all of the content and reviewing the pages. And then on Monday, you will receive a link to the website as part of our sale. launch. And then the next few days after that is when we'll be making sure that everything is in place and working as we want it. And then we hope to have the actual launch by the following Friday, which is the 3rd, I think.
Any questions, comments? By the way, I've heard some nice things about the new logo. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Great. Anything else? Okay. In terms of marketing communication plan, I presume a announcement will be sent out about today's meeting and the changes.
Yes, we plan to do that tomorrow.
Great. All right. Is there any other new business?
Yes. Now this is, I guess, where I would bring this up.
Hold on 1 second. New business is really, new business, there has to be on the agenda for you to talk about new business. But when we get down to director comments, you can propose items to talk about at future meetings.
Okay.
Is that what you want to do?
Sure, yes.
I mean,
because it's not on the agenda.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's what you're right. That's the place.
So, okay. So there is no new business. I'm sorry. Are there any legal comments or reports?
Well, I know you want to hear from me again. So this is the evening of redistricting. And I just wanted to bring to your attention, and I do have a handout, but it's basically AB 849, which is called the local redistricting. And it's a lengthy bill. It's about 60 pages. And it completely, after you heard what we heard tonight, forget it. This bill completely overhauls the entire system moving forward if it passes. It applies to the counties, the cities, the special districts, school districts, community college districts, county boards of education. I mean, literally thousands of agencies. As the California Special District Association and League of Cities described it in a letter in opposition, this bill appears to be a solution in search of a problem. It would require 10 hearings, public hearings, in 10 different locations around the district. Note, the meeting should be within walking distance of free parking and mass transit. It doesn't include first and second readings. It requires every agency to create a new and separate website apart from the local website, and they would have to maintain this for 10 years. There's all kinds of public notices. It would have, could be up to 14 different languages. I won't worry with all the gory details, but it would be a pretty onerous bill and could cost to implement. It could be very astronomical statewide to have to do it. So organizations like the League of Cities, counties, the Association of California Healthcare Districts, and CSDA are opposed to it unless it's amended.
Who's in favor of it?
Organizations you've never heard of, okay? I mean, honestly, it's I've got the list here, but I won't, unless you really want me to go over it, but it's organizations you haven't heard of. And this is really a piece of legislation that is, it's a bit of a stretch, and there's probably some good things here, but this is an amazing revamping, but I don't want to. I won't be able to belabor it, but I'll give you a little handout I have on it for you, and I just wanted to bring it to your attention. So it's working overtime in Sacramento.
Thank you. I have just a couple informational items. First, I'd like to ask each of the directors to stay on the committees that they were already appointed to. Director Rogers has agreed to come back onto the hospital. Police Oversight Committee, and thank you very much. And if nobody objects, I would propose that the committees that Director Wortham was serving on, that we wait until the new director is selected, and then we can see if that person wants to serve on those committees or make some shifts at that time. Is there any objection to doing that?
That was part of my comments. I would like to be added to the program committee.
How many people are on the program committee now?
Three.
Can't do it. Well, no, is Jennifer?
No.
Carol Yvette and Lynn.
Oh, then never mind.
Okay, so you can't have a quorum. You can't have a quorum in any committee.
You can attend but not speak.
It's okay. I mistook their agenda notes thinking that Jennifer was on that committee, but I was probably looking at something else.
Okay. Did you have something?
Oh, I was just going to mention that I hope we do actually have a program committee meeting on April 29th. Was there some discussion of possibly having that canceled?
It was canceled.
It is canceled? I'm a little bit concerned about it being canceled because of the LOI that we're expecting from Galilee. I think that's time sensitive because of the fact that if we wait until May, and this is to address the migrant housing issues that we have, that I think they need some resolution whether we're going to be able to help them with that because the harvest starts mid-May or so. So I am concerned about that.
Well, it could be brought directly to the board if you didn't want to have a meeting.
Yeah, and what I didn't think it was an action item for the program committee. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
I don't know.
The Galilee proposal, was that an action item for the program committee on the 29th?
No.
They're still in the process of creating their application. They're in stage two.
Oh, okay, because I thought in the notes. I'm sorry. I thought in the notes it said that they were going to bring it forth for the April 29th meeting, or if it was canceled, that it would be brought to the May meeting. So I was just a little bit concerned about that.
It wasn't expressed to us as an urgent item. Papers,
Donna, could you look into it, and if necessary, either they can schedule the meeting, or it can be brought directly to the next board meeting.
It could be brought directly to the board for consideration. Just one.
Okay. The other informational item I wanted to make is I wanted to clarify for people because several board members have asked me, how do you put items on the agenda? And if you want an item on the agenda for discussion, all you have to do is to let the CEO or me know, and we're happy to put it on the agenda as a discussion. What we can't do is put something on the agenda that requires staff work, so or analysis or things like that. That would have to be that when you put it on for the discussion, we could talk about it and say, do we want the staff to work on this and come up with a recommendation? And then we would do that, and it would be brought back for a discussion and a vote. Does that clarify? So if you want to put something on the agenda for discussion, all you have to do is let Chris or me know.
I think that's an important open door policy, but I think the bylaws also say that if two members request an action item, that they can bring that up. Is that right, Jeff?
I think you're referring to the calling a meeting.
Calling a special meeting.
Calling a special meeting.
I got it.
Okay. Either the president or majority of the board. Call a special
meeting. Thank you.
It's not a majority of the board.
Yeah, it is. In the old days, it was three. Now it takes four. Okay? We're seven.
How do I do that without conducting a serial meeting?
It's just requesting a meeting. And it has to be in writing. You know, you got to have a written. You can circulate a piece of paper saying, hey,
Well, I mean, I defer to you, but
it's one of the exceptions.
What you're talking about.
It's one of the exceptions to that requirement.
Okay, if there are no more informational items, director comments.
Director Rogers.
Thank you. I had an email that I sent out, which I was hoping that I could just hand it out, but. Just to mention it, but there's some very important things discussed at the Association of California Healthcare Districts meeting in Sacramento 2 weeks ago. And one of them was that I did meet with the staff of Assemblyman Garcia, and I proposed to them that thank you for helping us expand our district now all the way to the Salton Sea, but now what are we going to do about funding? So that was a head-scratcher. The other thing is there's some important legislation being introduced, and one of them is AB1, which would allow a constitutional amendment to change the percentage of passage for municipal bonds from 70% down to 55%, which will really impact a lot of
municipalities, especially those that are looking for bonds for improvement, especially seismic upgrades of hospitals. So that would be a big deal for districts that own hospitals. The rural districts want to have family nurse practitioners work without supervision of physicians, which will really help rural areas provide healthcare services. SB 58 extends the date for required seismic upgrades in rural hospitals, which is important for them. And there's also a request from CBAG. They've asked the assemblymans, our two local assemblymans, to request from the governor $10 million for homeless programs to be for CBAG and from state funding for CBAG efforts. And they're asking for...
That's in the foundation agenda.
Thank you. In the foundation agenda. I'm done.
Okay. Any other comments from the directors? Okay, I'm going to declare this meeting over, adjourned, and we'll immediately go into the foundation meeting, which hopefully won't be long, but do we need a break?
2 minutes? 3 minutes?
Yeah, 3 minutes.
5 minutes.
Thank you.